Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, November 24th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Hey, a beautiful, beautiful day here on the East Coast. Lots of sunshine and warm temperatures compared to the low numbers we had as of last week. So how does it go there in Dallas?
Well, it's another nice day. You know, decent temperatures. It was down in the 40s last night. It's in the 60s today. Might get up to 70. I don't know.
Yeah. It was a beautiful day, and certainly people are getting ready. It's going to be a quiet week in trading because of the holiday, and a lot of things are... Yeah, it's a kind of an interesting week, though, prior to a holiday. You know, all kinds of news that's happening. We'll be talking about that. First, let's get right to the gold prices today.
See, there's something odd about it, though. When you think about Thanksgiving, the problem is that it falls on a Thursday. That's always, if you're going to have a holiday, it should be on a Friday or a Monday. There's something weird about having a holiday toward near one of the middle days of the week rather than either Friday or Monday, if you catch my drift. A Thursday holiday. What is that?
Wow. Thanksgiving has been Thursday forever.
I know it has, but I'm just suggesting that this is a huge oversight. Somebody ought to make that.
That's true.
Should always be a Friday.
Yeah, you just, yeah. Have
Then we could have Black Saturday.
Yeah, but, you know, then people wouldn't have a four-day weekend. And, you know, they got to have a four-day weekend now, you know. We could have Monday, include Monday for the 4 days. But then we wouldn't have gold prices. Gold today, currently trading on the aftermarket, the New York spot price is down $4.30 at $11.98.80. Touch $12.04 for the high today. Silver, $16.56. And it's just been had a low, 16.18 sprung right back, and just been hovering around the 16.56 level for most of the day. Platinum was down 20 at 12.06, along with palladium down 1 at 7.93. Paper markets today, the USDX today was trading at down slightly, 0.17 and 88. That's amazing, 88.10. Crude oil today down 0.80 at 75.71, and I guess there will be a big old OPEC meeting coming while everybody's eating their turkey. OPEC is going to have their meeting And so a lot of those will be curious to see how OPEC is going to respond with their whether they're going to scale back product, even though it's pretty clear there's an oversupply of oil on the market. And so everybody will be following that very closely. So between your bites of turkey, you might want to turn on the news. And if you're concerned about Saudi Arabia and what they're going to do with crude oil. And the paper markets today, we have the Dow down. At least it was just a little bit. Let me bring up my paper. Oh, they reversed it. Up seven. Up seven at 17,817. You have, come on, screens, computer screens. You know, instead of trying to create new things, why don't they just make one that works well?
I tell you, I'd like for a computer screen, I'd like one that you can punch without having it just having it break down. I think there's a market for this because I'm telling you, there are some times when that software, something needs to be hit, and the screen is just asking for it. But you can't hit the little computer screen or it'll break on you.
Well, it's just like Yahoo. I mean, they have to change it constantly. So
that's one of the things that I'd like to do.
Just make it better. Make it, you know, how hard is it? You know, no wonder these places, you know, cry for profit.
All substance, or excuse me, all style and no substance. That's the problem with them.
Yep, absolutely.
Still, any of you got a little technical expertise? If you know how to build a monitor that can withstand punching, get in contact with me. I think there's a market for this sort of thing.
You have the
maybe
Dow.
Even computers that you can pick up over your head and hurl to the floor, and they're still okay.
Wow. A rubber computer.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, a rubber computer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that.
Huh?
You can stretch, yeah, okay. The Dow. Up 7, 17,817. The NASDAQ up 41 at 47.54. And the S&P up 5 at 2,069. 10-year yield, 2.31%. No change. And that's pretty much that in the nutshell as far as the paper market's going. And again, as I mentioned, you have OPEC meeting this week. And see if they're going to cut. And, you know, the talk that if they leave things as is, you could see $60 an oil for a barrel. So,
what do you think is going to happen to the U.S. dollar index? How far do you think it can move? It's at a little over 88 right now.
Well, if I believe,
which I wouldn't have thought was possible, you know, two months ago, somebody told me it was going to 88. I thought, oh, I don't see how.
Well, let me tell you, if I was in the market and playing with paper markets, I'd be shorting the dollar right now.
You think it's going to fall?
I don't think it's going to go down to 60, but I think it's going to go down from this level. Yes, I do. I'd be shorting.
You don't think it'll rise much more above
this? And it's not going to go much more, no. Hmm. No, I don't. Nope. It could.
Well, I understand the logic of
but
it. I understand
the most
why people would say, well, this is logical, yeah. You know, but the way the markets operate.
I mean, it's a rigged market,
whimsical.
So.
It's all whimsical to...
Well, it's rigged.
Well, I know.
So, you know, if oil goes to 60, yeah, I guess you could see a little bit stronger. But, you know, you have Israel that's looking to bomb Iran. You have the Saudis who are saying the reason that they're dropping the oil prices is to hurt Iran. So...
They say Iran, but who else is closely associated with Iran?
Russia. And,
that's
of course,
right.
The U.S. too. We've imported less oil on this last quarter, I mean, for I don't know how many years. And so certainly that's taking a bite out of their crimpets also. So, you know, with them doing what they're doing, they're getting everybody. They're protecting their market share. You know, so, hey.
I don't think that's all this is, though.
It's a combination.
It's not just market share.
It's a combination.
I don't think the Saudis really care exactly. They can...
No,
they can move in and out as they see fit, but
no, I think they can.
I think they're all the principal reason they're trying to get at someone. Iran, for one, and Russia too. And
well, they're protecting. Well, and the reason is because they're protecting what they have. I mean, when you have as much control as they do and the amount of money that they have, I mean, they were nothing until the U.S. decided to, you know, use the get the petrodollar going. They were nothing. They're going to protect that. They're not going to want to lose their billions of dollars of income. I mean, they've got a big social program they have to pay out. And if you look at what their social program is to all these Arabs, it's huge. So, you know, no, they're protecting their, you know, they
might
be.
As best they can, but I mean, the dollar is in, the petrodollar is in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
In part because we aren't buying as much oil as we used to. Foreign countries can purchase with currencies other than the petrodollar, which they couldn't do up until the last few years. It means that petrodollar scheme is slowly eroding away, and how much longer it's going to last, it could hold together for a couple of years, or it could be gone, you know. Under certain circumstances, it could be gone in a few months. You don't know what's going to happen. But Saudis have to know that they can't count on the United States to the same degree that they have in the past. They'll adjust to that.
Yeah.
This whole thing, you know, the only thing that's really holding this together is the Saudis are still selling, so far as I'm able to understand, they're only selling crude oil for U.S. dollars. And they're, you know, other suppliers are selling for currencies other than dollars. If the Saudis ever say, that's it, we're out of here, we're going to start selling for euros, right, or pesos or whatever else.
And you know what, that's true.
Dollars maybe that's suffering.
Maybe that's another reason they're actually lowering their prices, to keep their customers coming to them to be paying in dollars. Maybe these customers don't want to pay in dollars anymore, and they have a tendency, and they say, well, we'll lower the oil. I don't know. There's all kinds of reasons.
No one knows. Nobody
knows. All kinds of
this country.
It's probably a combination of everything. However, it's good for us temporarily as we see our gasoline prices go lower. But I figure it's just a matter of time until they add more gasoline taxes to bring us right back to the level we were. People were happy. People lived. People continued with $3 plus gasoline. So, you know, if they keep the gasoline prices low, you know, expect new taxes coming to your area. But,
well, you know, gasoline is almost astonishingly cheap. You know, and it's not just temporary. I can remember when I was a kid, gasoline was a quarter a gallon. And people look at it and they say, yeah, well, yeah, today it's $3 a gallon. That's high. Actually, it's not. When you calculate for inflation, there is not an enormous increase in the price of gasoline compared to what it was 50 years ago. You know, it seems like it. Nominally, yeah, it's gone from 25 cents to $3. But in terms of inflation, it might... I'd have to work it out sometime and think about it, or check one of the calculators, inflation calculators, and see how it works out. But it may be that after you calculate for inflation, it may be that current prices of gasoline are lower than they were 50 years ago. Now, I'm not saying that's true, but it's not impossible. So, I don't know.
Well, here's one interesting thing. While everyone is focusing on their turkey on Thursday, the White House is releasing a massive regulatory agenda. And this will be the fifth time that the administration, the Obama administration, has released its regulatory roadmap on the eve of a major holiday. The federal unified...
Takes all the fun out of holidays.
Oh, doesn't it? But it lays out thousands of regulations being finalized in the coming months. And, of course, again, we've seen this as a tradition that he lays this information out right before a major holiday. But, of course, he's not the only one. There's always been some major legislation that's been passed either on or on the eve of a holiday. I mean, that's what Washington does. It just so happens that he's probably done it the most out of all of them.
It's got a certain amount of that Grinch thing going on, you know?
But
he's the Grinch that steals Christmas every year.
But look at
what's going to be in your stocking, Jimmy? Are you going to get a pony? No, I'm going to get more regulations from the government.
Well, let me tell you how many. 3,415. And that's more than the last regulatory agenda, and one that includes 189 rules that will cost more than $100 million. So,
you mean $100 million together or $100 million each?
It doesn't specifically say. It just says it's over $100
million. Isn't all that big a deal anymore. I mean, it's a lot of money to me and perhaps to you, but it's not. On the government scale, that's not a big deal.
Well,
but if it was $100 million,
so much, yeah, but Al,
if it was $100 million for each of 89 of those, that would be significant.
It isn't so much the cost. What it is what are the regulatory? What is it? I mean,
yeah,
you can pass some major damaging regulations that don't cost a whole lot. So, you know, it isn't the dollar amount. It's really the
annoyance, or the annoyance factor. Or perhaps the loss of liberty factor,
and then we can go on. And I guess Ferguson has they've come to a decision, but as far as I know, nothing has actually been released. Any information?
Yes, we have a decision, but we're not going to tell you what it is.
What it is.
It's kind of like Nancy Pelosi with the health care.
Yeah.
You have to vote for it first, and then we'll tell you what it's all about. It's like Ferguson's a little like that. Everybody probably assumes that they're going to exonerate the police officer, which I think is probably the correct thing to do. From what I know, and I'm not a great student of what's happened in Ferguson, but everything I've seen, the photographs and the rest of it, indicate to me, if I was sitting in that police officer's, if I were in his shoes, and somebody punched me as hard as apparently Michael Brown punched that guy and damaged his left or one of his eyes in any case, I guarantee you that guy came back to try to hit me a second time. He'd be wearing bullet holes. All right, might not have had them the first time, but second time around, that would be a bad mistake for Michael Brown to make. You know, if you can get away with punching a cop in these in modern
times,
it's a good thing, good idea. Just keep walking, keep running. Don't come back. Good God, you got to be crazy. In any case, it does appear that he punched him once, he took off, and then he came back to get him a second time. And my understanding is the police officer shot him at the second, when he came in for his second helping of thumping.
Well, so we're not sure when they will release. I heard they were setting up for a press conference that could take a couple of hours. But also you read where they're going to try to delay, you know, to keep things as calm as possible.
They just need to put more fluoride in the drinking water and get everyone calmed down. When they all start singing Kumbaya, then you'll know it's time to release the verdict.
But we're going to be heading into a break soon, but Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel handed in his resignation today. We can talk a little bit about that when we come back from the break, Al.
Yeah, we'll get back because it's actually as odd as it sounds. I'll tell you why Hagel's resignation and the circumstances of his resignation actually give me a little bit of cause for optimism. And you wouldn't think that's a peculiar conclusion, but I'll try to explain it and make a little sense of it. When we return to financial survival, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
We're going to continue with the Mint State 62 $10 Liberty gold piece, $755. That does include your shipping. And, of course, this is the coin that would be certified by NGC or PCGF. And there's only known to be 361,000 of these coins that survive in certified Mint State 62. So it's a nice way to get into a lower grade $10 gold piece, but yet the performance has been of extraordinary. Their 10-year average premium is 38% in 2009, when on the certified coins really truly took off prior to the spot gold. They reached a premium of 97%, and today we're close to 23%. So you have a lot of very upside potential of this coin. So make sure you get it added to your portfolio. It's a great addition. If you're just holding bullion gold, it's a great addition to your portfolio. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. Thank you, Al.
Okay, got an article here from the Associated Press. Hagel resigning as defense secretary. Former Senator Chuck Hagel has been the U.S. Secretary of the Defense for the past 2 years. I'm just reading from the article right now. Some White House staff have expressed concerns that Mr. Hagel wasn't proactive or engaged in cabinet meetings and other national security discussions. Now, what does that mean? He wasn't proactive. He wasn't engaged in cabinet meetings and other national security discussions. It means he wasn't exactly a team player for Obama's team. That's what it really means. He didn't really cooperate with Obama to the extent that they wanted him to just cooperate and do as he was told. And therefore, they have pressured him to resign, and he has. He's being ousted. He's not just resigning, in my opinion. He's being pressured to resign. In what appeared to be an effort to refute that criticism, Obama said Monday that Hagel had always given it to me straight during their private conversations in the Oval Office. Hagel has had his own frustrations with the White House in recent weeks. He sent a letter to National Security Advisor Susan Rice in which he said Obama needed to articulate a clear view of the administration's approach to dealing with Syrian President Bashar Assad. Letter is said to have angered White House officials. I've seen a report from Infowars.com that claims that Hagel has actually warned that there are officers in the United States military who are pro-New World Order and they are not to be trusted. And if you can believe Alex Jones and Infowars.com, that article, are saying that's the reason he's being ousted. He stood up and tried to expose. He said, look, some of these guys are New World Order, and they're not working for the best interest of this country. Now, whether that's true or false, I don't know. It's only true. It's true that the report is there. I don't know if the facts are right, wrong, or close. Senator John McCain, the Arizona Republican who's poised to become chairman of the Armed Services Committee, said, Hagel's predecessors have spoken about the excessive micromanagement they faced from the White House and how that made it more difficult to do their job successfully. What they're saying, or what they're implying, is that the Obama administration is constantly trying to tell the Secretary of Defense whether to turn left, right, go fast, slow down, hit the brakes, whatever. And we have to wonder about this. The president can do this. I don't doubt he has authority to micromanage if he cares to. But you got to wonder, if he's micromanaging because he's doing something he believes to be right, or is he micromanaging to achieve certain political objectives that are different from what you might think of as the prime directive for the military? Military, secure this, you know, win this war, win this battle, capture this city, capture this this objective. They are taught to think in a fairly non-political and objective manner. When the government intrudes, when the president intrudes and micromanages, is he saying that he understands military tactics better than the people in the military? That strikes me as improbable. If he thought that, it's more likely that he's trying to implement political goals that are considerably different from what you might expect the military to embrace. Right? That's my guess on this. I don't know that's absolutely true, but here's the key line for me out of this article, and this is what gives me a certain amount of a good feeling about Hagel's resignation. That seems odd, but it says, Hagel was the first enlisted combat military veteran to become a Secretary of Defense. He served in the Vietnam War and received 2 Purple Hearts. Huh? Now, I'm actually encouraged by Hagel's story and his resignation because photographs of Mr. Hagel show that he's aged, in my opinion, he's aged 10 years in the past 2 years. 2 years ago, he came into the office of Secretary of Defense, and he looked like a strong, vital man who was still in the prime of life. He was in his 60s. I think he's 68. 68. Now. Yeah, he's 68 now, so he went at 65. He looked like me. Looked to me that he was a strong, competent individual. And right now, the photographs I've seen of the man look like he's nearing death's door. Now, it may be that he has some medical problem, and maybe that's the real reason for his resignation. But what I'm reading, I'm seeing a man who really wanted to do what was right for the American military. Having been a soldier, having been wounded twice, he really wanted to do what was right for the military and for the American soldiers. That's my guess. I haven't studied Hegel. I don't know for sure what his programs were, but that's the way I'm reading this at the moment. And I think that his concern for the military was so, I suspect, that his concern for the military was so deep and so sincere that the man has just been pushing himself and working 24/7 every day for the past 2 years, doing everything he can to do what he believes is right for the military, what he believes is right for the American soldier, and the effort he has exerted has caused him to sacrifice several years of his life. He really doesn't, what I've seen, this guy, there's been a dramatic shift. Again, 2 years in the office and 10 years off his life, if you ask me. So I take a certain amount of satisfaction in that. Not because I'm wishing Mr. Hegel any bad luck. That's not it at all. The reason I take some satisfaction is it's evidence that there are still a few people in positions of power in this government that are literally sacrificing their lives to try to do what they think is right for this country. Not what's right for the New World Order. Not what's right for the government, but what's right for the country. Hegel might have been that kind of guy. And the price he's paid for it is dramatic. And on one level, it's sad and unfortunate, but on another level, he at least gives me reason to believe there may be some more people in Washington. I wouldn't think there were many of them, but it's encouraging to me to see that there may be some of them who actually care about this country and want to do the right thing. Oh, as for the American soldiers, I'm not sure what American military, I don't know what their opinion is of Mr. Hegel. But I'm wondering if we can expect to see another Secretary of Defense who cares about American soldiers as much as Hegel probably has over the past 2 years. I doubt if we're going to see that kind of Secretary of Defense again anytime soon. The next Secretary of Defense will be pro-government. Won't be there to do what's right for the military. He'll be there to do what's right, what's best for the government. And there's a difference there that is not encouraging. But in any case, Hegel, I'm sorry to see that he's paid this price, but I'm glad to see that somebody in Washington is willing to pay that price. I find that encouraging.
Well, we certainly live in a time where, you know, it's very few people do support you know, what you just described, and it's possible that he is one. I mean, he's following Leon Panetta, and certainly Panetta, with his book he released, certainly said some unfavorable things about, you know, what goes on in Washington, and I'm not a fan of Panetta, but, you know, so I'm sure a lot of these guys do. Yes, Al?
I'm just crossing my mind that what happens in Washington does not stay in Washington. This may explain Obama's journey to Las Vegas last week. Maybe he's thinking about relocating the White House there, and then what happens in Las Vegas stays in Las Vegas. They may have more secrecy and better control than they do in Washington, D.C., in terms of restricting the public's access to information.
But, you know, we also know that Hegel did vote for, when he's a senator, I believe, he did the Patriot Act. He did the, you know, so he supported a lot of the legislation that took away a lot of our rights. So he might have been pro-military in there helping the military man and helping that sector of the government. But on the other hand, he still supported many of those programs. Now, whether he was misled or whatever to
nobody
to
knew. No one saw the Patriot Act. They all jumped on it stupidly, you know, and that would include Hegel. I mean, he's not entitled to any award for that. They voted for it without knowing what was in it.
But there was
hadn't even been written. They didn't even have copies of it. They just voted for a law. This is just an extraordinary, shameful event. Did the same thing with Obamacare. It's insane. They can't vote for laws that they haven't even read. It's insane. It's just so wrong. It's intolerable, and yet they do it on virtually every law that's going up there. Nobody reads these things. They just broker them. They don't legislate. They just broker laws.
So and my point is, you see him do two different things. You know, he did the he supported the MDAA. What is it? The MDAA.
I don't know.
Well, I can't recall.
Alcoholics Anonymous for doctors?
No. Be serious, Al.
MDAA. I don't know.
Be serious. It sounds more like a brassiere size. I'm trying to be serious here, Al. So please.
Tell me to be serious. See, this is the kind of life I have to live on this program. I try to make a little joke and be serious, then turn around and get another joke.
Did you get it?
Yes, I got it.
Did you get it? Anyway, so you know, it's two sides, and we need something positive, and you know, perhaps this was one. But I think in order to get to any of these levels, you still have to be part of the program. You still have to belong to their groups and plans, and maybe maybe something along the way, you get to a certain point, and you actually do see what is going on. Maybe you missed a lot as you were going up the chain. You know, it was all, you know, good fun and profitable. But you get there, you see what's going on, and certainly you can have a change of heart. So,
yeah, I'm not saying Hegel was perfect. I'm simply
saying
he really cared. I get the impression that he really cared about the job he was assigned to do, and he cared on behalf of the soldiers. And I'm going to speculate that most of the people you appoint for Secretary of Defense, well, they have an interest in it, but I don't think they're ready to sacrifice to do that job. I don't think they really care about the military so much as they care about their resume, and I may be mistaken, but I'm at least pleased. Hegel says I'm wrong. All right, Hegel to me saying nope, there's people in there who actually care about doing the right thing. So hooray. I might not agree with him, but I'm still saying he really cares. He's not just in it for the pension or to get out of there and get a job with the military industrial complex.
And actually, Al, that was NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act.
Well, you were close.
I was close.
You know, that was only a letter off. The MD.
MDAA.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right, let's move on.
I've got something here that's just an interesting quote to me. This was provided by Niall Ferguson under a book called Complexity and Collapse. And he's talking about great empires and the way the system really works. And we're inclined to think that the system functions like a military machine. Somebody's at the top and giving orders to subordinates who give orders to more subordinates. And this thing is, you can make a chart of the authority and how it flows. And what Niall Ferguson said, he said, great powers and empires are, I would suggest, complex systems made up of a very large number of interacting components that are asymmetrically organized, which means their construction more resembles a termite hill than an Egyptian pyramid. They operate somewhere between order and disorder, on the edge of chaos. Such a system can appear to operate quite stably for some time. They seem to be in equilibrium, but are in fact constantly adapting. And there comes a moment when complex systems go critical. A very small trigger can set off a phase transition from a benign equilibrium to a crisis. A single grain of sand causes a whole pile to collapse, or a butterfly flaps its wings in the Amazon and brings about a hurricane in southeastern England. Well, they go on with this a little bit, but I like the description, and I think he's right. We are inclined to think in terms of the government and empires as being built like an Egyptian pyramid, where we have one guy sitting at the top, and he's got a few subordinates under him, and then more and more and more as the pyramid spreads out. Right? And what this guy is telling us is, nope, that's not what's happening. We have a bunch of people that are kind of running around in a state of disorder, and they manage to hold it together for a lot of time. But it's not the coherent system that most of us imagine. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addisk with Melody Cederstrom here on Financial Survival, and we shall return momentarily. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hey folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Here's something that's kind of interesting. The Fear and Greed Index is an economic indicator that measures from 0 to 100. And down at the zero end of the spectrum is evidence. They calculate evidence that's indicative of extreme fear in the market at zero. At 100 on this range is extreme greed. When you're fearful, you think the prices are going to fall. When you're greedy, you think the prices are going to rise. And they follow this. They have a couple of different indicators that they factor in, and they calculate this fear and greed index to see what emotion is driving the market at any given point. And on the spectrum, you go from extreme fear, zero, up to neutral, which is about 50, and then to on up to 100, which is extreme greed. Right now, today's fear and greed index reads 55, which is about neutral. All right, it's a little bit more on the greed side, the optimist side. It's not down on the fear side, and it's not at the extreme end of the spectrum in either instance. It's a neutral. But what's interesting to me about this is 1 year ago, the reading, we are currently at 55. 1 year ago, the reading was 68. Solid greed, not extreme greed, but solid greed. 1 month ago, we were in extreme fear, 14 on this spectrum. We're in 1 month ago, extreme fear. A week ago, we were in neutral. And today at 51, and today we're again still in inner near neutral at 55. And the point to all of this, from my perspective, is this thing is going like a yo-yo. There is volatility, 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 which is consistent with what we've seen in the price of gold, for example. It's consistent with what we've seen in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Dow Jones fell in just the last month or so. It fell from over 17,000 to down 16,000 or below. And everybody thought, oh my gosh, it's the end of the world. It's going down. And then it rockets back up again to new record highs. And gold has done strange things, inexplicable things in terms of the falling price. And then it jumps back up, and then it falls back down, and jumps back up. We can't seem to agree on what's going on in the markets right now. There is this volatility, and all by itself, I read volatility, I'm inclined to say, look, if things are volatile, that's generally a good time for people to become conservative and look for stability. Look for something that you can hang on to that's going to be there 6 months or a year from now. There are a lot of things that are volatile, that are moving, prices going up, prices going down. What's going to happen to the Dow Jones? Up or down? Where's it going to be a year from now? What's going to happen to price of gold? It is in the midst of significant volatility, I think, that people tend to move into something like gold or silver. Do you think that's valid, or do you know that it's not?
Well, no. I think anytime there's any type of disruption in the systems or there's uncertainty or fear or anything like that, they move into gold. I think we've seen a big move into bonds. You'll have people go there first until, the first knee-jerk reaction will be bonds. And then after that, they realize, that's just paper anyway. You're going to have a large amount of the more funds being funneled into, the gold and silver, the monetary metal. That is their function. People will still do that no matter what. So it is, you can follow those fear indexes, and I think they're great for the paper markets. But then we come back to the same thing, Al. It's like everything is so rigged and manipulated, and all this, the computer trading, and people don't have a chance in the markets.
Well, that's true.
People don't have a chance. They're lucky. They're very lucky. It's like they're at the craps table where the guy throwing the dice is lucky and everybody else is benefiting. But, one of these days, the guy is going to start rolling some bad dice and they're all going to go down with them. But, it's great. They're on a ride and it's all about confidence. We say that how often on this program? It's all about confidence. And, hey, the world is a fine place right now. America is great. Even watching news programs this weekend, people are talking about, the rest of the world is really crappy. You're going to have China going down, Europe's going down, Japan's in a recession. But the U.S. is doing better. Now, how can that be?
Just lucky. Well, it's like, again, got that teeter-totter effect. It's putting on your cleanest dirty shirt. It's relative. There's not an absolute measurement that I'm aware of where they compare one economy to another. They are compared on a relative basis, for example, on the U.S. dollar index. U.S. dollar is measured against six other currencies that are also fiat. They're losing value right now faster than the dollar is losing value, so the dollar appears to be strong. But is it? I mean, is there intrinsic strength in the dollar right now? And when the dollar is weak and losing value and going into inflation, the other currencies appear to be strong. This whole thing is a Punch and Judy show. It's a sock puppet show. And what do you do? you have to, I think you have to behave in a way that's conservative. Because for me, things appear to be so unstable and so unpredictable that you can't rely on what's going to happen in the next 3 weeks, 4 weeks. And you can't think that way in terms of most of the markets, in my opinion. I know that people can make pretty good predictions and, you know, for the next couple of weeks, but the volatility is such that what will the Dow Jones be a month from now? Will it be pushing 18,000 or will it be pushing 17,000? Where do you suppose it's going to be? I don't think there's never been an easy way. There's never been a reliable way to trust the markets. There's always an element of risk, and no one knows for an absolute fact what any of them are going to do. But you can approach the markets with a certain amount of confidence, or at least you've been able to in the past. You could approach with the idea that you understood the fundamentals well enough where you could look and you can say, this is the trend. I don't know how many people are out there who think they understand the fundamentals well enough where you can reliably predict the trend. Pick it out. Say, oh, this is the trend. It's going up. It's going down. Going up fast. Going down slow. Where's the trend? What's the trend? Can you figure it out? I don't think anyone right now can point to trend and say we can depend on this trend. And there's the problem. Therefore, you know, from my perspective, I'm looking to just protect what I've got. And that means even though price may fall, I'm still looking for gold, still looking for silver. Huh? I just can't get into, it's just my mindset where I cannot get into the paper market enthusiastically and say, oh, this to me, the paper market is a big gamble. And the gold and the silver, yeah, there's risk involved, I get that, but not to the same degree. You can't lose everything with gold and silver. You can with paper. That's part of the reason why I'm just saying, look, all right, get hold of gold, you know, hang on tight.
Actually, you could look for a trend, Al. I mean, I get where you're coming from, and you're right. However, it's always, you know, the trend is always your friend. But if we look and try to find a trend, to me, the trend is there are no fundamental forces behind anything that's going on. This is a trend, and that's not changing, and it continues to become more of a market that lacks fundamentals when you're looking towards the paper markets. There isn't anything that supports. You have the world falling apart, but yet the U.S. continues to do well. How's that work? The U.S. is supposed to be the major engine behind all these other economies. So you would just think that if all these other economies were failing, that we too would be slacking off in our economy.
Well, I think we're going to be. I think we already have.
They just haven't told any. They just don't. You know, you don't have anybody that releases the true information. If you follow John Williams at ShadowStats, you know, he tells you what the numbers are, and it tells you we're in a bad economy now. But listening to Wall Street, listening to mainstream media, oh, everything is fine, and take your pills and continue on, and you know, we'll keep you, to where you're not falling behind. But we're the ones that are really getting wealthy as people continue to lose their purchasing power with through many things. So it's
I'll tell you what I see
insanity.
Right now. I'm one of the things I think that I suspect. Back in the 1990s, I knew of a Chinese guy here in Dallas. I met him on one occasion. We weren't friends or anything, but he achieved a certain amount of notoriety because he knew he was going to go bankrupt. He had a business. He knew the business was going to go bankrupt, but he wasn't telling anybody about that, including his bank. But he knew it was going to go bankrupt, and he applied for 10 credit cards with a limit, $25,000 limit on each of the cards, and from 10 different banks. And they all granted, gave him the credit cards based on what appeared to be going on in his business. He knew he was going bankrupt, but they couldn't tell from the books or whatever financial statement he had to provide. And in the end, He went out and he rang, he got the credit cards, and he went out and he spent all $25,000 on each of the cards on $250,000 worth of goods and services that he purchased. And when they called him up after he hadn't made a payment on any of this stuff, or they contacted him, he said, "I'll be happy to pay this if you guys will just verify the loan, the purchases." He's entitled to do that under the Federal Fair Debt Collection Act. At least he was then. I don't know what the law is now. Well, it means somebody's got to swear, take an oath, that this guy actually did buy a flat-screen TV or a new television or whatever they had back there in 1999 or thereabouts on the 24th day of September at about 3:03 in the afternoon. And the only way you can do that, you got to find the clerk, and the clerk somehow has to remember some guy that he saw 2 months, 3 months, 6 months earlier. He doesn't remember. There's no way. As soon as he asked that this be verified, the credit card companies just dropped all collection efforts, and he got away with $250,000. Now, the reason that story rings my bell is he knew he was going bankrupt, and he knew he could beat the system. I'm looking right now, and it appears to me that the major governments of the world are going deeper and deeper into debt, even though they know that they are so deep in debt they can't pay it off. Our government's going deeper into debt. The European Union's going deeper into debt. The Japan is going deeper into debt. Every one of them knows debt is already so big it can't be paid. Are they doing the same thing as this Chinese guy did back 25 years ago here in Dallas? Are they just playing the system and running up this enormous debt because they know the whole thing is going to blow up in the very near future? They know, just as he knew he was going bankrupt. The governments are sitting back, and maybe they know they're going bankrupt too, and they're just running up the debt, buying everything they can for the government, knowing that the day is fast approaching when the creditors are going to take it in the neck. Well, I don't know that they're doing that, but I can see that if they knew there was a global depression coming, in the confusion and chaos of that global depression, they'd be able to sit back and say, "Oh, gee, we're really sorry, but we're not going to be able to pay our debt. And those of you that have pension funds that are funded with treasuries, with U.S. bonds and treasuries, sorry, you know, we're just going to write that all off because, well, we have a global depression." They are behaving, to my mind, as if they're running up the debt. They know it can't be paid, and they know it's all going to be repudiated in the reasonably near future. Now, we'll watch and see if that's true or false. But if it is, better fasten your lap strap, folks. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening again. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Payments fast. And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too fast.